It's time for 41 is the Mic, a weekly Chiefs podcast with Nick Jacobs of KSHB 41 and Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest. 41 is the Mic starts now.
Welcome, everyone. Yes, you are back with 41 is the Mic. I am Matt Derrick from Chiefs Digest, alongside Carl Cheffer's enthusiast, Nick Jacobs, KSHB 41. Nick?
Yeah, and you know how to needle a man whenever you're bringing up Foot Locker like that. Yeah, no, what can I say? Carl gives me hope that no matter how bad I ever get at my job, I will still have an opportunity to be gainfully employed. That is a man that has failed his way forward in a weekend gig. And for people that don't know that, fail your way forward, that means you can be incompetent and you still somehow get promoted and get more money. Like, this is a weekend job for the guy, and he's awful at it, and he continues to be awful at it. And then the league seems to be like, hey, here, take more of our money to embarrass our game. Please do that.
That is Super Bowl official Carl Cheffers that you're talking about there.
That's great. So. He could go to 15 Super Bowls for all I care. I've seen the games, whether the Chiefs are in it or not. That man is at the top of my awful officiating list. He's right there at number one in the power rankings.
It is. I mean, you know, officials are pretty much the same thing as offensive tackles. If you know their names, then there's a problem. And Carl Cheffers is the most well-known official to any Chiefs fan.
And not just Chiefs fans. There's other fan bases that if you brought up the name, boy, it's like a lightning rod, man. they just come in droves and flocks to talk about their experiences with how Carl Cheffers, made some questionable calls against their team.
Well, we got a lot of things to cover in this one. And Nick and I take our responsibility here pretty seriously, because I've at least heard from a lot of people who I think that we're slowly becoming the therapists for a lot of Chiefs fans, Nick, because, you know, I feel like it's our responsibility to kind of just break everything down and let you know, hey, you know what? Things are going to be okay. Things might not be what you want them to be, but things are going to be okay. We could always try to find a silver lining, can't we, Nick?
Well, if we are, in fact, the people that help soothe your soul, then I think you need to either rate, review, or retweet the podcast every single chance you get. And let's share this with the world, with the entire Chiefs world, so they can all join in this and feel better about their lives and not be like somebody that's in a Wendy's parking lot crying into their Frosty. Not that I know anybody that would be like that. I don't know anybody that would do that, Matt.
I feel like that you and I have both probably done that at some point in our lives.
Maybe I did it tonight. Who knows?
That's possible. See, Nick got all the emotions out earlier, so he can now be here as a rock for those of you who need him. So. Yeah.
That's what I am. That's what I'm known as. I'm that rock that you lean on when you're feeling sadness.
we'll try and find some silver lining tonight. There was not much silver lining in the first quarter of this game, because as we were talking about before we got started here, I think you and I both agree on this one. Third game in a row that the Chiefs came out flatter than their opponent, and there's even a little bit longer stretch. I mean, the same thing happened in Denver. This is now a stretch here where the Chiefs have been coming out. The other team has been setting the tone early, having the energy, and Buffalo coming off the bye week. Hey, the Packers were coming off the mini bye. You know, a little bit self, you know, maybe explanation there, but it took the Chiefs some time to settle in, Nick, and I did not think that was necessarily going to be the case tonight.
Well, when we did our last podcast, I said that was part of my concern, was that the Chiefs were coming off a physical football game on Sunday night. It was going to feel like a short week in some ways, with how late they were going to get home, or if you want to call it early Monday morning type versus, you know, if it was a noon or 3 o'clock game. So you knew that was going to be tough for them, and then trying to get back in the recovery and everything. That's why if you have a Thursday night football game, boy, you want that earlier in the year versus this time of the year. So that's a benefit that's been out of the way for a little bit. But yeah, I mean, look, for the Chiefs here, like, I mean, the Bills looked fresh, obviously, as they should, with a bye week and getting away and being able to take their minds off football for a week. I mean, they looked fresh. they had a really good game plan early on there. They knew where to attack Steve Spagnuolo. And spoiler alert, some of it was where Brian Cook would have adjusted a lot of things, and that's where they were attacking. They used a running back to perfection in James Cook. They used some, you know, as you and I were in the pressers this week, the eye discipline. They tested that out with the Chiefs safeties early, and they tested it out with the Chiefs linebackers, and they got them on a handful of plays, and they got Cook into space where they knew they'd have an advantage against the Chiefs linebackers and some of the formations that they were doing. So that's how they were cooking early, and they were able to get some things done because of it and get up 14. But I want to say this about Cook: the explosiveness he has and how he is speed wise, that's what you're wanting from a Chiefs running back down the road here. If they had somebody of Cook's caliber in their backfield, boy, I tell you what, it wouldn't have mattered if they were, you know, if they were down 10, 15, 14, whatever. Like, he can get in the flats and he can make some things work. And with some of the holes the Chiefs O-line's been able to create the past handful of weeks, he would have a lot of explosive plays in the Chiefs offense, and teams would have to play the Chiefs a lot differently with that style. And obviously not having Pacheco, you know, that's another thing we get to down the road. But I mean, Josh Allen, look, he's a talented quarterback. The guy can make plays. And early on, Joe Brady was flexing to show what he's capable of. But that's the thing. I just don't think right now the Chiefs have enough guys on this roster that are used to the mental toughness you have to have week in and week out to go against this caliber, to go against this level of competition, to where guys are gunning for you. They are giving you their best. It's easy for guys that were rookies last year to be able to say it. Now they're going through it. Some of the other guys that have been on teams that haven't had the success the Chiefs do, they are going through it as well, and they're finding out it's much more taxing and much more of a grind whenever you are getting somebody's best shot every single week.
Yeah, and this to me is it's been kind of another good example to me of just how this team to me compares a lot to the 2021 team, in which and I think that was another team that really struggled with the meeting the expectations every single week. And maybe that's part of the youth of this team that's still there. Maybe it's just a little bit of the turnover that they've had in some places. But, you know, hey, when you're the defending Super Bowl champions, you're going to get everybody's best shot every single week. Everybody has got you circled on their schedule every single week. And I think I can make a compelling case that in all five of the Chiefs' losses, except for maybe the Philadelphia game, I think I would set aside that because I think that the Chiefs absolutely brought one of their better efforts, and that was a close game that I think either team could have won.
And they should. They're both coming off bye weeks.
And they both should. But the other four losses, I think I could absolutely make the case that the team that won was the team that was more focused, that had more effort, that had more energy, and just built momentum throughout the game. And that's something that the Chiefs have struggled to do.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're not wrong one bit about it. I mean, that's where it's coming from. When you look at this Chiefs offense, like when you break it down, this is essentially what it is. When you're getting everybody's best shot, you have to have a certain level of attention to detail. You have to have a certain level of focus that no matter what it seems like, you know, lining up on sides or, you know, catching a pass or running the right route or doing what you have to be on the same page with the receiver, or, you know, not getting out of your stance too early, or, you know, protecting the football, working on that type of stuff. All those things, those matter. Every single one of those things matter. And you have to hold yourself to that level of excellence, and you have to push yourself to that level of excellence. Doesn't mean you aren't working hard. Doesn't mean you're not trying. But at the end of the day, those are all those little things add up, and those all turn into plays, and those all turn into moments to where when a big moment arrives and gets taken away from you potentially, or, you know, you have a slip in attention to detail, then that's where it costs you. That's where it costs you games. And in the reality of it, you don't have the explosiveness at receiver. You do not have the consistency collectively at receiver. And you do not have the explosiveness in the backfield to be able to overcome some of those deficiencies. That's in the grand scheme of it, that's where the biggest problem is you could have a hold here. You could have a fumble there. But you had Tyreek Hill in the past, or you had another, you know, or you had Juju Smith-Schuster that could come up with some big plays reliably that could erase those. That would, you know, erase some of that aspect of it. And Mahomes at times could help erase some of it too. But there's not enough threats on that offensive side of the ball that puts fear in defenses and makes them respect each piece of the puzzle individually. They're just like, well, if we give them single high, Mahomes is going to take the shot. They don't have an explosive running back, so we'll let them burn up, you know, time on the clock. That's fine. They want to get 4, 5, 6 yards. That's cool. Go ahead for it. Go ahead and do that. And at the end of the day, as long as we keep Kelce in check, and that's really all you got to do, then, you know, the defenses are willing to take their chances with everything else. So that's what they put on tape. That's what every defense knows now, and that's what every defense does, because they don't believe the Chiefs offense has the discipline and has the ability to drive 12 plays, 13 plays, 14 plays, 15 plays to get what they need to done for a touchdown. So, like, defenses are just counting. In some ways, the defenses are counting on the Chiefs to Raider it and self-destruct, and they've been able to do it this year.
Yeah, we've been talking about this for a little while now, that has become the new strategy for the Chiefs, which is for defenses against the Chiefs, which is to absolutely don't attack, don't blitz, don't try and force something to happen. Simply keep Patrick Mahomes contained in the pocket and wait until the Chiefs make a mistake, because they, so far this season, have been consistent as far as whether committing the penalty, committing the turnover, committing the mistake that eventually torpedoes the offense. And once again, tonight was a pretty good example of that. There were a couple of, I thought, bright spots. And the more I look at the defensive effort tonight, I think I'm even more optimistic now about it than I was even a couple hours ago, because one, you know, the first touchdown that the Chiefs just gave up, two parts to it. One was, as you mentioned, early on, Buffalo was absolutely attacking the areas of the field where Brian Cook would normally be. They were absolutely throwing right at Mike Edwards, and James Cook's touchdown went right into his zone. That was a big play. But also, once again, it was the offense, because the offensive turnover, while that drive did not lead specifically directly to a touchdown, it affected the field position, so that once the Buffalo did get their touchdown drive, oh, it's only 53 yards. I mean, that's, once again, a short field that you've given your defense. That's what the offense put the Chiefs into. And after that, after those two touchdowns, and one was, you know, once again, kind of a field position situation, after that, this Chiefs defense absolutely made Josh Allen's life a living heck tonight. And that was impressive to me.
Well, what you and I had talked about privately is I thought at times Steve Spagnuolo was going to unleash heck, as we'll call it. And it was going to come at some point. And here's the crazy thing. One of the times it actually happened, if I remember correctly, was on that Cook touchdown, to where they brought one of the corners on a blitz, and they were expecting Edwards to pick up the running back if it came to that. And it didn't work out that way, because he got caught flat-footed by thinking that they were going to stretch out a run, and it didn't work out that way. Then, you know, like, there was other times where they made it work. And then whenever Chris Jones and Joe Cullen had their disagreement on the sidelines, then that's when Chris Jones turned into 2022 Chris Jones, and he was unstoppable. He was relentless, man. Like, he walked, he didn't walk. He briskly moved a left guard back into Josh Allen's lap on a routine basis. And, like, he was on fire at that point. And whatever happened between him and Cullen in the disagreement afterwards, they were completely fine. I put up the video on X that shows that those two are completely fine. So it's an in-the-moment type of thing, heat-of-the-moment type of thing. It happens, but it brought out the best in Chris. Now, the question becomes in that, who else position coach-wise can do that other than, you know, Dave Merritt? Who's the other coach on that staff? And whenever they like to use these buzzwords and they like to say these things in pressers that, you know, it takes all of us and it takes this and that, the number one line that I got told a long time ago by a coach, and I remember it to this day, is instead of pointing the finger at someone else, point the thumb at yourself. And the Chiefs say all those things in their pressers, but how many of them are actually doing it? Because the mistakes keep showing up on the field. So for position coaches, what are you doing wrong that is causing this? What are you slipping on that may be causing this? Is there something you could be doing better? Is there something you could be teaching better? Could you be pushing these guys in a way, getting out of your comfort zone and coaching them in a different way? That's the question each of them has to ask when you've lost three of the past four. How are you failing your players? And then players have to ask, how am I failing my teammates? What am I not doing? What am I slipping on that is causing this? So each one of those guys, when you ask that question, some of the guys, they get it fixed. Some of the veterans get it fixed. But in the overall scope of it, there's not enough of it happening. And I think that's caused some of the frustration. That's caused some of the competitive blowups that we ended up seeing on TV today. And frustration's boiling over to a certain extent, and it's completely understandable because you can talk about accountability, but actions speak louder than words. And some of the actions are showing Groundhog's Day, which is the same thing over and over again. So at some point, there's got to be a jolt. At some point, there's got to be something that wakes them up from sleepwalking in the way that they have, especially in the first half and with the mistakes that they made. I mean, you can stand by a team to a certain point, but you're slipping to where the Broncos are one game away from you right now. Like that, a month ago, people would have laughed you out of the building for that. And I understand there's ebbs and flows to the season, but the past 2 weeks have been playoffs. The Packers playoffs was last week. They needed to win to survive. The Bills need to win to survive. That is what you're going to face in the playoffs, especially from a mentality perspective. And two teams have out-executed you and proved that if it's not 24 or more, you're dealing with the loss.
Yeah, and I think it's notable you talk about, you know, who are the coaches on this team, especially at the assistant level, that are going to push guys' buttons to try and get the most out of them. Because, and let's face it, not all players respond to the same kind of coaching. I mean, everybody responds a little bit differently.
Yeah, some drop passes.
But you're right. I mean, Joe Cullen and Dave Merritt are both, you know, they are both kind of coaches who are going to get in your face, and they're going to tell you what they think, and they're going to push your buttons. And offensively, yeah, I mean, I would say that the Chiefs had a guy like that named Eric Bieniemy, but I'm not sure that they have somebody on the offensive side, because we're not talking about that. We're not talking about who's the guy on the offensive side. And honestly, the Chiefs defense is playing great. And Chris Jones is playing great. I mean, if Joe Cullen is getting in his face and they're getting into something, it's because Joe Cullen is trying to push Chris Jones to become a Hall of Famer. I mean, that's the kind of thing that, you know, you would used to see with Travis Kelce. Chiefs offense is struggling right now, and nobody's getting into fights, Nick. I'm not saying that they need to, but that is kind of interesting, because when the Chiefs offense was at its best in the past few years, we talked about it. We always talked about it. Oh, Eric Bieniemy is getting in the face of Travis Kelce. He's getting heated with Patrick Mahomes. You're not seeing that right now.
Yeah, and if there's one coach on that staff that really needs to be doing it, it's Embry, the wide receivers coach. But you know, we don't ever see him on the sidelines, and that may be the TV camera's fault. They may not know where you're at or who he is. I don't know. But, like, I mean, that's a guy that's, you know, he may just not have enough, may not have enough seasoning to feel comfortable doing that. And also at the same time, if he does do that, that players kind of, you know, respond to that and they're like, oh, yeah, no, this guy knows what he's talking about. So, like, I mean, there may not be that comfort level yet. But, I mean, that's the position group's your biggest problem right now. I guess that's what causes you problems. That's where you need the most accountability possible. And the same things keep happening. And the second place you need accountability as well is your offensive tackles. Juwan Taylor keeps making the same mistake. Guess what? He already got paid. So, I mean, he can just ride this thing out if he wants to. But, hey, if that's not acceptable to you, then maybe you have to put in somebody else to tackle. And he has to understand that if he wants to be out there and play, wants to be part of the game, then he can't keep doing that. He can't keep having this issue or that issue. And you still have the same protection issues that I've said this time and time again, but it's the same thing. The nameplates change, but the problems always remain the same along the offensive line. They keep happening year after year over the past decade. And there's issues with picking up and passing off. It's staying on the same level. And like the problem that's going to come playoff time, Creed and Trey dealt with it today on one of the Mahomes sacks, is they weren't able to be at the same level because Juwan Taylor's going so far upfield on his sets that, you know, Trey's doing what he can to try to get back to be at least semi-even with him and with Creed to where he can make up the difference between the two of them. And then so whenever that this tackle engaged the inside shoulder of Trey, Trey took him on, then the other defensive end looped around in Creed and created his own pick like you would see between wide receivers, and there was no chance. And then Mahomes, you know, ends up dealing with that pressure. Won Ian Morris a couple of times. His guy, one of his first series, they're moving really well with the script and everything. And his guy, he's laid on his kick step with his guy. And defender gets his hands up, makes an interception off of it. Because the guy was free. Guy had a clear line. And guy, you know, I mean, you know, Wani isn't engaged with him and he's behind on him. So that guy's got a clear view the entire time. So, and you know, I know he's a rookie and I know he's got, you know, he's still got a ways to go. But then there's another time where Mahomes getting to load up for a big pass. The Wani's guy just loops around, even though he was engaged with him initially. Then he loops around two gaps over. And then he's the guy who hits Mahomes. And Mahomes is setting up for either a 5 or 7 strap drop. And, you know, it's just like, it's just all those little things, like they all add up at the end of the day. And so like it's just a trickle down effect to where, you know, the receivers can't separate quickly and they can't catch some of the passes. And then the offensive line has to hold on a little bit longer. And then if Mahomes can't take off scrambling and kind of move out, and that's, here's my other shit. I'm just going to rant one more time, is with the Chiefs. What frustrated me near the end for the Chiefs and their play calling is the Bills decided they had had enough and they started blitzing relentlessly, especially on that final drive. They were blitzing the final couple of drives. They were not going to let Mahomes have time to do a census survey in the, you know, in the back, in the pocket there. So they were going to start bringing blitzes. The Chiefs earlier had done this and it was working very effectively. They moved the pocket. And that's what you have to do. If teams are going to start blitzing, to do the trend breaking that you're going to do, the tendency breaking, the thing you have to do is move the pocket. Move it. Move the pocket. I'm going to say it until, you know, it keeps staying in everybody's head. That maybe if anybody, one of our head guys listening, is that that's what you have to do to counter some of those times when teams are going to blitz. I understand it cuts your field in half and everything, but that's maybe what you need to do to buy yourself time for receivers to get open and for you to be able to kind of counterbalance some of the issues you have on that roster. Matt, I apologize. I went way too long. I cede the time or floor to you.
I told you I was going to provoke a rant out of you because you said you didn't have one and we got one. So I feel much better now. I feel like I've done my job, Nick.
Oh, you were sneaky, Matt.
You know, and I'm getting ready to ask you about the offense's problems, but I do want to take one quick side detour. Yeah. Because I can't wait until the all 22 comes out.
Well, there might have been 21 guys on the field at one point.
You can tell it's getting late.
They had some personnel issues.
You can tell I've been awake too much today. We're recording this podcast early Monday morning, if you can't tell. Very early Monday morning. But I cannot wait until the Clyde Edwards-Helaire screen where the offensive line was all out on the right side, just absolutely destroying people. I can't wait to see that from a different look, because that was, at least live in person, watching that and watching the offensive line just out there executing a screen perfectly for a change and absolutely destroying people was a lot of fun.
You know what the crazy thing is? In the moment when it's happening, I didn't have a lot of joy in that because I was watching and I'm like, there's either going to be a penalty because somebody's already yelling hold, or two.
But there wasn't a penalty, Nick.
Or two, I'm going to be sad that it isn't a more explosive running back taking the ball the distance.
Well,
I know it's terrible of me, but I'm like, but when I saw it, I'm like, man, if they had McKinnon or Tony, that guy may still be running, but poor Clyde. There's only so much giddy up that guy's got left.
Damian Williams in his prime might have taken that one all the way.
Damian might have as well. Yeah, Damian. Yeah. That actually, now that I think about it, that screen was run a handful of times with Damian, either against the Patriots in the AFC Championship game.
Oh, yeah.
Or the, but yeah, no, that I think that screen's the one that they used to use with Damian. I think
you're right.
So, yeah, they pulled it out. They pulled out that bag of tricks, unfortunately.
They've had more than a few problems with the screen game this year, but I was glad to see that one and just to have some bodies, you know, going by the wayside. So I digress. But you mentioned...
Did I make you sad that I wasn't happy
about
it?
You made me a little bit more wistful now about it. But and I agree. I mean, I thought when I was watching it, I was like, gosh, this is so well done. It needs to go for a touchdown. But it didn't. So now you have taken away a little bit of the joy, Nick. But
I'm sorry, man.
I'm still going
to
try.
I hope you don't catch a cold from the ice inside my soul right now, Matt. Okay.
I'm going to try and move on and not be too upset about it. But do briefly want to touch on what you kind of pointed at, which is that, you know what, after the week one loss to Detroit, we were talking about you can't lose a turnover battle, you can't commit this many penalties, and you can't have this many drops. And what are we talking about after game 13? We're talking about turnovers, penalties, and drops. When in the world is this team going to stop shooting itself in the foot, as Andy Reid would say?
September 2024.
Once the parks come in off back order.
Yeah, dude. Like we said last week they're not here yet. But now, I mean, September 2024. I mean, this team is like, this is who this team is. Like, I mean, this is what's gonna happen. And then when they're gonna play those teams with that type of intensity, and I just don't know if they have enough at every position group to be able to pull out what they need to. That receiver, they don't have enough to be able to pull it out. They don't have that veteran leader in the group that's going to hold his teammates accountable and that can be the guy, be the seasoned veteran that can rally his wide receiver group together and be the one that kind of pushes them in meetings and kind of sets the example. They don't have that. That's the truth. I mean, like I said before, Tyreek Hill, to bring him up, like Steve Spagnuolo said, and I'm going to reference it time and time again because it was such a phenomenal point, is that Tyreek played the way that he practiced, you know, or practiced the way he played, however you want to phrase it. But like that's what he did. And, you know, and that was an example for a lot of other guys on that football team. And at that time, excuse me, they got the best out of their receiver because of it, their receiving group. So at, you know, in the grand scheme of it, like, They are who they are. Like, I've accepted it. I accepted it a handful of weeks ago. And maybe that's just why I've become as indifferent to some of the things as, unlike other people are still saying, you know, there's people that still think that Justin Ross coming back is going to fix it. He hadn't played in, you know, almost 2 months, but he's going to come back in game number one and just be able to set the world on fire. So, I mean, I don't know. We'll see how everything shakes out, but I don't know. I mean, like, so, like, Justin Ross-wise, look, I mean, at the end of the day, he's going to do Jody Fortson package-type stuff at best, if that. And so, you know, I don't know, Matt. Maybe I'm just a defeated man that's already accepted how things have been going the past month.
Well, I will give you one more thing from tonight's game that will give you, and I meant to bring this up when talking about how good the defense was, but I'm looking at the silver lining. And once again, L'Jarius Sneed absolutely shuts down one of the top receivers in the league. Stephon Diggs, 11 targets, which I don't quite know why, other than the fact that he's Stephon Diggs, why they were throwing to him 11 times, because it wasn't working. 4 catches for 24 yards. L'Jarius Sneed, man. I mean, I don't know if everybody around the league is smart enough to put him into the Pro Bowl or give him All Pro, but name me a corner who's had a better year than L'Jarius Sneed.
You want to know what L'Jarius Sneed's hoping for recognition was?
A big bag in March.
Yeah, I don't think he cares about anything else.
I mean, he's waiting for. I mean, and man, at this point, the Brinks truck is going to be coming in March.
He's getting it. He's getting it. It's going to be very, very expensive, and I don't know if the Chiefs are going to be able to pay that and fix all the problems they got on offense, keep 15 happy, and keep him upright. So that's going to be their biggest priority they got to do. They developed L'Jarius Sneed. They'll have to develop Shamari Connor to potentially replace him down the road here. And, you know, they got a secondary coach in Dave Merritt that can make it happen. So that's why I have faith in that type of stuff, because Charvarius Ward was a guy. Let him go to the 49ers and then develop Snead off of it. And then, you know, they're developing Trent McDuffie, developing Josh Williams, developing Jalen Watson. They got Nick Jones. And then, you know, got Ego Boydo, all those guys. So as long as Dave Merritt is back there as a secondary coach, I'm always going to have faith they can develop the next individual in this scheme.
Today, you bring it up, and you know, this was the first moment that, all season, that made me now wonder if, you know, if Jamari Connor might actually continue to be a safety, because the way that the Chiefs have almost used him exclusively as a nickel corner this year, and you know, and just, I mean, it's been a matchup way that they have used him, but he did not take any snaps at free safety until last week when Brian Cook went down, and he took a couple, but once again, almost the majority of those snaps are going to Mike Edwards. And today, I think the only times that I saw him lining up, you know, on the back end as a true safety was on those few handful of snaps that Justin Reed went out. I mean, I wonder, you know, hey, L'Jarius Sneed was a, you know, corner turned safety that turned back to corner. I think we need to try and, you know, figure out what Dave Merritt and Steve Spagnuolo's plans are for Jamari Connor, because I mean, I've seen enough that they think that he can do that, that he can be maybe the slot corner that you go to next year, that allows you know, Trent McDuffie to be the guy on the outside, and you know, we'll see what happens with LJ, you know, whether he comes back or not. But you know, I mean, Jamari has made a case. I mean, I think he can play either position, but I'm interested to see just what their future is for him.
I'm telling you. Like, they're grooming him.
They're grooming
him, and I think he'll be L'Jarius Sneed's replacement long-term at corner. Slowly, inch by inch, him getting that interception today was big for him in terms of his confidence and what he's doing and how he's working. But I'm telling you, he's a lot more like L'Jarius Sneed than people realize in his play, his tackling ability, and how he sees things. So your next wave that you're working on is between Nick Jones and Jamari Connor. Who can you develop as your – outside corners to pair with either Jalen and Joshua, and you, if you can, you keep Trent McDuffie inside as a blitzer and more of that physical inside corner.
And even Ego Boydo, I'll throw him in there, because the reason why the Chiefs signed him to their 53 was that some other teams were interested in stealing him off the practice squad. So there's obviously talent there that the Chiefs have been able to find and to groom and to develop. I mean, okay, the last elephant in the room that we have to talk about, Nick, is obviously the end of the game.
Yeah.
Chiefs, again, you know, second week in a row, a interesting officiating call, changes the complexion of the game. I don't think we can argue. Kadarius Toney lined up offsides. Now, how egregious it was? Well, Carl Cheffers said it was pretty egregious. I mean, I was the pool reporter that spoke to him and Walt Anderson after the game on both that and the catch that the Latavius Murray had that I'm still not quite sold was a catch, but they were quite convinced that it was. But you know, clearly the Toney lining up offsides was huge. It wipes out, first of all, one of the craziest touchdowns I've ever seen in my entire life. Travis Kelce's lateral was something that only Travis Kelce would ever try to do. And frankly, it was one of the most beautiful throws I've ever seen from somebody in the middle of the field. I mean, he executed it perfectly. I mean, if he had thrown his pass against the Giants a few years ago like that, you know, maybe Andy Reid would let him throw the ball a few more times on some trick plays, but it was one incredibly done. But Nick, I mean, how does this happen? I mean, how do you let this happen?
Which part?
The Kadarius Toney lining up his offsides part.
I mean, if you look at it from, I'm going to go multiple angles here. So just sit back and get your popcorn ready if you're listening. And Matt, I apologize. I'm going to take the floor here for a minute.
Rant number two. I'm all for it.
Not necessarily rant, just my perspective, my vantage point on it. For the first part of it, I know Andy has mentioned it, and I know other people mentioned it, that they didn't feel like Toney got a warning or anybody got a warning that, hey, if this happens again, this is going to do. So that's where frustration one is. And frustration too is for some people on the very next play, Von Miller is offsides on that. So you're clearly not calling it evenly, and that side judge or field judge, I can't remember which one's over on that side. I want to say side judge.
The down judge was the one that called it on Tony.
Okay. Well, the downs judge. Thank you, man. I appreciate
no
that.
No problem.
So that individual, not very consistent because it was on the same side, both in back-to-back plays.
Correct.
So that's where I think a lot of fans' frustration comes from. That's where my frustration comes from, is that it isn't consistent. And Vaughn was over the line a little bit more that was on the TV broadcast than Tony's foot was. Now, third part of that sequence is the something that I'm going to end up looking on tape and I'm going to end up looking closely at. Did Creed have the ball a little bit further, and that's where Tony lined up on? And then did Creed move the ball back a little bit? Because centers do that. And that's not me knocking Creed. That's just in the center community. That's just what's done. Did that ball move back a little bit that made that quote-unquote look more egregious than it actually was? So there's that part of it. And then the fourth part we already talked about is the attention to detail. Now wide receivers on the Chiefs team, they're going to have to look every single time, get the thumbs up, make sure everything's all right potentially. Or, you know, they may have a more competent crew than Carl's crew, which is what they're going to be called from now on in my book. I'm still going to call him Foot Locker, but Carl's crew, you know, that's what they're going to be known as from now on. So you take all those factors combined, and they create the frustration to where I think a lot of the Chiefs are upset, where a lot of that locker's upset, is they know how much that momentum of that moment would have meant for them going forward in their season. To where, hey, they were able to come back with under 2 minutes, score the go-ahead touchdown. Whether they win or not, who the heck knows, but they now know deep down inside their soul, hey, when we lock in, when we focus, when we put it together, we can take the lead again late in games. We're the Chiefs of old. We can do this again. And then it creates that core of belief for them. And that's something that everybody in that roster can buy into, that things are fixed, that things are getting better, that the work they put in, the accountability that they're saying, all that paid off. So when that moment got taken away because of an attention to detail issue, that's where I think a lot of the frustration is. They're like, man, we have tried everything. We have done everything that we literally can, and it's still not working. It's still not happening. What the heck? And with everything that's gone on in these past 4 weeks, that's creating more of a frustration to where there's some things that they may be frustrated about that are happening in practice, maybe things that aren't happening in meeting rooms, things, and they're just collectively boiling over at this point. But it's coming, the way they're able to let it come to the surface instead of biting their tongue is through this penalty. And that may be where the transference of it may be in that regard. I know I sound like a psychologist at this point. I did take some psych classes, but I am not a professional. So all that combined, that's where I think it all plays into it. So, I mean, look, it's unfortunate that it happened, but there were so many mistakes throughout that game that led to that moment being magnified, that led to that moment, you know, being something that's going to be talked about, to where Mahomes has a presser. And guess what? Patrick Mahomes' presser and what he said, that's going to be the talk of the week. The star quarterback, a Super Bowl MVP, is questioning the officiating, and people are going to take that different way. Some people are going to take that with Vegas bets and try to do that. Some people are going to take it this way or that way. And, you know, it's going to be a topic more so than what people realize.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, how many times have we been talking about this, though, that the Chiefs get themselves into a game in which there's a half dozen moments in the game that you could point to and say that was a tipping point? I mean, that was how many these games have won been so close, but they put themselves in the positions where it just takes one play where you could have changed the outcome of the game. I mean, the Bills had their own moment when they decided to go for it on a fourth and short. I mean, one, you know, I thought, hey, the Chiefs were able to get the stop on third down. Maybe the Bills will go for the field goal here. So you've held them to 3 points. No, they decided to go for it. And the fourth down play was an epic disaster. Looked like it was going absolutely nowhere. And then Josh Allen just manages to bail them out of the play. and they end up getting the touchdown. I mean, that was a moment there where it could have been a 0-point outcome. It could have been a 3-point outcome. It could have been a 7-point outcome. Instead, it's 7 points for the Bills. And that play there also was potentially the difference in the game. I mean, the Chiefs get these half dozen tipping points right now. And right now, none of them are going their way.
Yeah, and the reason part of it isn't going their way is they don't have enough erasers on the roster anymore to make up for it. So erase those mistakes to cover up those sins. Like it's just all collectively, you know, it's just piling up and piling up, and you don't have the speed that you need in your offense to be able to make up the difference. Because I mean, you know, if I was on that defensive side of the ball, I'm like, man, I keep giving you good positions, I keep getting the ball back to you, and you aren't doing anything with it, like that's going to get frustrating as the year winds on and on and on, you know, as it ticks on and on and on. So, look, the thing I got to say here is, I mean, accountability, it's fun to say it, but it's another thing to do it. Because, I mean, there does come a point, and I think this happens in any profession, in any industry, where you have certain people that are your workhorses. They're your people that you lean to kind of guide you through it, but it also at the same time to really kind of take on the brunt and the load of what needs to be done and what the objective is. And there does come a time where those people feel like they're just barely keeping their heads above water and that they're, you know, paddling around just to not drown. And they get frustrated sometimes too, if the slack isn't picked up here or there, or they feel like that it just keeps, you know, piling more TPS reports on them, to use an Office Space reference, just keep piling more and more TPS reports. And as the famous line is in Office Space there, when he's like, when he's talking to the Bobs and everything, and he's like, yeah, so I got 7 bosses I report to. So you know how hard I work? Just enough for them not to come, you know, yell at me or talk to me, basically. He's not wrong. So, I mean, like, you know, it's, I'm curious to see how, I think they'll bounce back against the Patriots. I think they'll have a good week of work out there. I think they'll have a good game. But it's just interesting. This is the most adversity this team has faced in a while. And it's not smooth sailing like it used to be. And just when you look around at the roster, there's just not enough guys that have been around long enough to know the grind of the season when everybody's got their target aimed at you.
Thanks to your Office Space reference, I am now going to have a visual of you on the day after the Chiefs season ends, having a sit down with the wide receivers and saying, so what is it you would say you do here?
I'll tell you what, Matt. I'm just impressed each week when I get there, and the key card the Chiefs gave me still works to the media workroom.
Hey, we all have that feeling.
I feel like the guy in Hard Knocks. I'm always wondering if that door is going to open this time or not, that it's going to unlock. But the Chiefs, bless their hearts, they keep letting me show up there and walk in the door.
Well, I'm sure. I'm hoping we will both be allowed in the door this week, as Chiefs. Next week, we will be coming to you after the Chiefs' noon kickoff against the New England Patriots, which could have been on a Monday night, but now has been banished to noon on Sunday.
Fine by me, man. I miss those noon games.
And the Chiefs are an early 9.5-point favorite, despite the fact that the sky is literally falling at Arrowhead Stadium, at least parts of the ceiling on the members of the media.
For those that don't know, where they had the press conference room, I was not there, but I did see it on our live stream. For the people that don't know, there was some ceiling tile that may have fallen off the wall during the Chris Jones press conference, and did, you know, it was kind of fitting for how things have kind of gone this season. It was kind of just a microcosm of how things have gone, to where, you know, even the ceiling's caving in a little bit.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, and you haven't seen the look on Chris Jones's face as the ceiling tile is falling down and then bolting from the room.
He's like, that's my cue to exit.
He's like, I'm out of here now. And hopefully you don't hear me cursing, because I know that I said maybe a bad word, Nick, when I turned around and saw that the ceiling was falling. So hopefully none of the mics pick that up.
I didn't hear it. And you know, I'm gonna pretend that you're still a saint that would never say a word like any of that.
Even though it was still, even though it was a few feet away from me and I was in no danger, I, you know.
You didn't know at the moment. All you heard was exactly. Like, it sounded like a steel rod hit the ground. And then you heard some shock from some people in there. And then, you know, when our camera zoomed out, you're like, oh, okay. Ceiling tile just is on the floor now. I'll be dang.
It did happen behind me. So the only two things I had to go on were the sound of what was going on behind me and then the look on Chris Jones's face. So, yes.
Hey, so, you know, it's just another part of the journey for today, Matt.
It's just the way things were at Arrowhead today. One of the stranger days I think I've ever had on the Chiefs beat. But, hey, hopefully next week, Nick, when we get everybody together after the Patriots game, discussing a Chiefs victory. They're certainly a favorite if they don't pull off the victory in New England next week, even though the Patriots are coming off a surprising victory at Pittsburgh.
And three extra days of rest.
Have 3 extra days of rest coming off the mini bye week as another common theme. This is one the Chiefs should absolutely win. But strange things happen in the NFL, Nick.
I like how you said should. Didn't say will or definitely.
You're 100%
right, Matt. That's where we all have to be guarded with our hearts at this point.
There you
go. What you have to do. Our heads and our hearts have to be guarded, like they're in a lockbox.
Hopefully, I mean, even though I came into this, you know, into the podcast tonight with a pretty good attitude, and I thought I was being reasonably optimistic, Nick has managed to bring me down to his level. So hopefully
you're calling me the buzzkill of this party.
So hopefully we haven't done that to all of you this week.
Wow, that's hurtful, man. Call me the buzzkill of this podcast.
I didn't see where the buzzkill. I may have implied that, but only this week, Nick. Only this week, I was the bright ray of sunshine and optimism, and you've brought the cold, harsh truth of reality to me.
Look, I'm sorry. I can't help it if I've already accepted who they are. Like, I don't. They were punishing me for accepting who they are. They've shown me who they are throughout the year. I've just accepted and embraced that. No, that's you. That's you, little Timmy, or whoever. You know. But man, seeing Mahomes' face there sometimes today, I felt bad for the guy. I mean, I shouldn't because he's making, you know, $500 million. I shouldn't.
It's not like he's making Otani money or anything, so.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad. I just feel bad because, like, man, that's got to be so frustrating. Like, you're trying to do everything you can to be a leader, to make all these plays, to kind of drag the team along at times, and, like, it's just still not working, and just feel like you're just smacking your head against a wall sometimes, and you're like, at some point, this wall is going to cave in, right? Like, it's going to, right? So, I don't know. It's unfortunate, but, look, no matter what happens, if this helps sear in the necessary minds that can make change, that they got to make sure this roster never has a deficiency of speed and playmakers again, then I will have felt that this season was worth it. And something that's been rattling around in my head time and time again when we were talking about the receivers up at training camp is I was like, this is the most depth they've had a receiver before. I don't think any of us were wrong about that, but the question we forgot to ask ourselves is, why is nobody separating themselves? And that's, you know, that's the question that we forgot along the way.
Well, one of the, you know, questions, and I say this about different positions from time to time, but, you know, classically it's about quarterbacks, but I was thinking it in training camp and having the discussion, is this a case of if you have 9 wide receivers, you don't have any?
Yeah.
And, you know, and honestly, yes, this is a very deep receiver group. But, you know, the question is, do they have a 1 or a 2, or do they have 8 number threes? And, I mean, maybe the jury is no longer out on this, although I tell you what, Rashee Rice is convincing me that he's going to be a number one receiver in this league before too long.
He will definitely be in the top 3.
And, hey, already has more yards receiving in Kansas City than any rookie under Andy Reid.
I just love that you mentioned that and brought that up. Because for people that don't know, KCSB Sports Director Mick Schaefer and I were sitting there, And about the time you did that, I felt so bad for you because then Rice fumbled the ball. And then,
he did.
And then Nick responded to you on Twix or Twitter or X, and he's like, hey, Matt, read the room. And he was joking with you, but he knew you'd appreciate it.
I did appreciate
it. It was just the timing of it. I was like, oh, poor Matt, man. Trying to give this guy his flowers, and then he stomps all over him. And
I know, trying to give the accolades. I mean, I have been the official.
And I'm not talking about Mick. I'm talking about the fumble.
I've been the official Rashee Rice tracker this year, you know, tracking all his potential, you know. I mean, because frankly, his numbers as a rookie are absolutely ridiculous under Andy Reid. And oh, my other tracker for that I was going to mention, Nick, and I should have put this in earlier, because sometimes Andy will be a little hyperbolic when he says that he's never seen something before. I did go back and look at it, which did mean going back through 25 seasons of penalties. But it is true. Andy Reid has never had an offensive player called for offensive offsides.
Well, I wish I could say that he still
hadn't seen it. Until today.
I wish I could say he still hadn't seen it in his career, but you know what? We all got to be witness for that one.
It gets called on occasion, and we'll
never forget it either.
Yeah. So there were a couple of times that it shows up in the NFL database as an offensive offsides, but when I went back to look at the box scores and the game logs, it was actually just on a kickoff, so it wasn't really an offensive player. So... yeah. 25 years as a head coach, and it's the first time it's ever been called for him.
Well, at least he can add another thing to the bucket list.
So probably understand a little bit of his frustration tonight. So, all right, everybody, we will get out of your hair, but we will be coming back at you next week after Chiefs and Patriots to break it all down. And don't forget, you can always join me on Tuesdays. I am now doing a Q&A on the Chiefs Digest YouTube page. So you can want to hit me there. But in between 41 is the mic episode, you can always find me there, and I'll be glad to answer your questions as best I can. And hey, you never know, maybe Nick will end up joining me one night on on the Chiefs Digest YouTube page. Maybe I can convince him to come over and bring his ray of sunshine over to my side gigs.
Just send some sugar my way. That always picks my spirits up. That's all you gotta do, man. Just bribe me with sugar, and I will be singing happiness like a parakeet for you, bud.
Man after my own heart. Thanks, everybody, again for joining us. If you enjoy the show, like, subscribe, hit all that good stuff. We appreciate it. We appreciate the support, and we will join you next week after Chiefs at New England.
You've been listening to 41 is the Mic, presented by KSHB 41, your home of the Chiefs and Chiefs Digest.